Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. Welcome to the show. Today is June 10th, 2026. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 49,918, the NASDAQ at 25,169, and the S&P at 7,266. Our topic tonight is retirement accounts, transitions, distributions, and options. We're live. We'll take your questions. Cindy and Bob are in the studio this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay. And we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking live, just give your question to Cindy, and they'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight's topic, retirement accounts, transitions, distributions, and options. And I am going to make a note at the beginning of the show here that next week I'm going to talk about inheriting retirement accounts and the differences that that may make to you and the options when you're inheriting. So that'll be next week. Tonight, more about transitions in accounts, distributions, and what kinds of accounts you might have available or access to. That's the option part. So transition, one of the reasons I thought this would be a timely topic, at least here in our local area where we air out of the Lehigh Valley, our local hospital is going through a transition. They've been acquired and the 401k, 403b is transitioning to a new custodian. And there can be a lot of confusion with that, but it isn't just when a company may go through a change. It could be your current employer. It doesn't mean they have to be taken over by someone. Even your current employer may change the kind of retirement account that they make available to you, or they may change the custodian they're using for that 401k or 403b. We might call that the record keeper, for our show tonight. So typically what happens when there is a transition from an old plan to a new plan, you're going to be given a notice, and it's a notice of change. They have to let you know it's happening, and you may not know it's happening until it's happened. It all depends on your HR department and how much they communicate, you know, to the employees. But a notice of change is letting you know that your account is going to be temporarily restricted. This could be really important to you because you may have to, you know, make some adjustments, which I'll talk about in just a minute. So with that notice of change, they're also going to give you very other relevant information, and it's called the blackout period. This notice is going to include or indicate what that blackout period is. So when the plan is changing from, you know, one record keeper to another, that might take a little bit longer period. If your employer is just changing the kind of plan you have, which is what happened at my place of employment, we stayed with the same record keeper. We just changed the particular retirement plan option that we were using. That blackout period was quite short when we just stayed on the same platform because they literally were just moving the assets kind of internally. So that's a shorter period. But if you're moving to a new record record keeper, then typically you would expect that it's going to be a longer blackout period. Why would that be important, the blackout period? Because your account is basically frozen during that time. It's restricted. You don't have access to it. So the reason they're giving you the notice, hopefully with, you know, plenty of time, is because if you need to make any changes prior to the blackout period, that's your opportunity. So you really have to pay attention to these notices when you get them. Because if you needed a distribution, if you were eligible for a distribution, you needed a distribution, a loan, how your account is allocated, how you're doing your contributions, you want to perhaps make these changes prior to the blackout period. So some people, let's pretend you're very aggressive in your retirement account, super, super aggressive. And perhaps, you know, as we've recently seen, the stock market could be in a bit of volatility, a bit of flux. And that's a worry for you. And the, you know, if the investments are may or may not have to be liquidated in the current plan, may or may not, I'll talk to you about that in a minute. If you have concerns, maybe you're super aggressive, and if any of those funds have to be liquidated, you're going to be out of the market for X period of days, or, and, you know, you may want to be a little bit, you know, more conservative, because if you're, I didn't mean out of the market, I meant frozen, if you can't act on it, and you can't sell. So perhaps the market's going crazy or it's dropping, and ordinarily you would just go into your account online and, you know, move some money around. You're not going to be able to do that. So that's why it's really important to pay attention to the notice of change. Consider, is there anything you need to pay attention to? Perhaps look at your holdings. Is there anything that you would be worried that if you can't touch it for 30 days? Because sometimes the blackout period could be 30 days. I looked to see what our blackout period was when we stayed with the same record keeper, and it was like 7 days. It was a quick turnover. But typically, we're usually seeing about 30 days of blackout period. And you'll usually have, you know, several weeks before that blackout period to, you know, affect some of the changes that you may or may not want to do. So again, if you want to request a distribution or a loan, or, you know, change the allocation, because if you're thinking, oh, I know that if I'm not going to have access to this for 30 days and the market is in flux, perhaps I want to get more conservative. I don't know. It all depends on your circumstances and your situation. And it's important to know that any changes you make within a 401k, within a 403b, within a Roth 401k, within a Roth 403b, those changes don't have any tax impact unless you're taking a distribution. So if you're selling or buying in any of those kinds of retirement accounts, there is no tax consequence until you actually take a distribution. Okay, so that's important to know, meaning maybe you want that little bit of assurance or not, you know, because if you don't, you know, take care of those things, then during that blackout period, you're not sure what's happening, you know, to the underlying investments. And when the blackout period is done, your accounts, your investments are going to show up on that new platform, and it's going to be, you know, invested probably similarly to what you had. How could that be? We just went through a blackout period. We just changed custodians. How can we have the same investments? Or similar investments. I'll talk to you about that when we come back from this break, and that's called mapping. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know there are many ways you can support the programs you love on WDIY? You can make a gift of appreciated stock or mutual funds. A powerful way to give, and you may avoid capital gains taxes. If you're 70 and a half or older, you can also make a tax-smart gift directly from your IRA. And if you have a donor-advised fund, you can donate directly from the account and benefit from a more tax and cost-efficient way of giving. To learn more, contact Seamus McGrogan at 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy, and she'll write it down. We're talking about retirement accounts, transitions, distributions, and options this evening. And right now I'm talking about if your employer has an existing plan transitioning to a new custodian or new record keeper. And that could be with an existing employer, or if your employer was bought out through a merger or something like that, then the new employer, the new entity, may also make a change, and that would also be a transition. We talked about being given a notice of change, a blackout period, and now mapping. So what happens during that blackout period? Recall I said, you know, you can't do anything in the account, and the notice of change is letting you know if there's anything you need to do it before the blackout period. Typically, what that notice of change is also going to give you are the new investment options. And typically, your trustee of the plan is going to, you know, either work with HR, work internally, work with the new custodian about what kind of options would be available to the employee participant to allow them to have a broadly diversified allocation. And it's really important that as a fiduciary that they take that responsibility, meaning offering, you know, large cap, mid cap, small cap, international, domestic, bond funds, you know, a broad diversification of investment options for the participants to choose from to provide, you know, an allocation appropriate for their risk tolerance. And I'm talking typically about those kinds of plans where you can pick your own, you know, investment options from a menu of options, not full direct kind of self-directed brokerage, but within the plan's investment menu. Now, years ago, we didn't have something called target date funds, but now we do. And that also provides kind of a broad diversification and a way to kind of do it without even thinking too much for those people who don't want to be involved really in their investments. The custodian typically will have target date funds, meaning targeted retirement date funds. So if you're 25 and you think you're going to retire when you're 65, that's 40 years from now. So that might be a target date 2066 fund, you see. And if you have a long-term target date fund, then typically that allocation is going to be much more aggressive than someone who perhaps is going to retire in 5 years, who might pick a five-year target date fund. Then that fund might be much more conservative with the premise of, oh, someone's retiring in 5 years, they're going to have to access this money. We don't want it to be too subject to too much market volatility. So it would tend to be more conservative. Now, just because you're going to be retiring in 5 years or you're going to be retiring in 40 years doesn't mean you have to pick either of those target date retirement funds. You actually have flexibility in picking those too. So let's pretend you are, you know, 21 and you aren't going to retire for, you know, 40 years, but you're super conservative because your parents lost a bunch of money and now you have whiplash from that and you're afraid to invest, but you don't want to make any investment selections yourself. You don't know how to do it. You don't want to do it. Well, then you could get a more conservative allocation suitable to your risk tolerance by picking maybe a shorter term target date fund. And on the in the same way, if someone's going to retire in 5 years, but they've always been very aggressive and they're not worried about market volatility, they might have other resources, they might end up having a pension or Social Security or plenty of cash flow that they're not going to rely on their portfolio like in 5 years, then they may want to select a target date fund. If they're not interested in picking their own investment options, they could pick a target date fund with a longer timeline. So, you know, they want to be super aggressive. That person retiring in 5 years might pick the 2060, you know, target date fund. So you're not locked in. There's flexibility. And the nice thing about these target date funds now is the menu of options that employers can choose for their plans. Typically, you know, might have in the old days, it might have been 12 funds. You didn't have a lot of options. Then it might have increased to like 20 funds. Well, now with the target date funds, you know, that could throw in another, you know, 25 options. So it really broadened the options within an employer plan. So bottom line, that those investment options do offer the participants a way to be broadly diversified is the goal. All right, so there's a mapping for that. So if you had, you know, a certain percentage of, you know, large cap, mid cap, small cap, and they were with ABC, you know, fund company, and now the plan is moving to XYZ fund company, your trustee has already worked with that custodian to say, do these match up? Oh, okay, the A fund matches up with the X fund, the B fund matches up with the Y fund, etc. Then during that blackout period, the ABC funds would be liquidated, and when the blackout period is done, they would automatically be mapped directly into the substitute funds. If there are ever times where there is not a match, there's not something they can map to, typically that same notice or that investment option menu, they're going to tell you what the default will be. So if you either, one, don't do anything, or maybe you have your current allocation in cash or something like that, they're going to tell you what the default option would be. And typically the default option is going to be a target date fund. Okay, so, you know, the mapping gets done, default options are given, and that happens after the blackout period. Okay, now there is also another option that some participants may have elected to do, which would be something called the self-directed brokerage account. We're seeing more and more of those offered by employers. And typically what that is, if perhaps that employer's plan is with that ABC, you know, fund company or custodian, record keeper, the self-directed brokerage account, what that is the participant can open an account outside of the traditional 401k plan at that custodian. It has to be an approved custodian. And then that participant's employee and employer contributions are going to go into that self-directed brokerage account, and they can select their own investment options just as they might in an individual account. And then the whole world of investment options, for the most part, with some exclusions, are going to open up. So you may not be able to access. And some of this is changing, and I'm not going to talk about the latest, you know, legislation, you know, the Department of Labor's easing of some of the restriction of investments you can do in 401ks. So typically we couldn't do, you know, crypto in 401ks and certain private investments in 401ks. So other than, you know, certain kinds of investments, for the most part, it would be what one might be used to investing in if they had their own individual account. So that's a self-directed brokerage account. That there's not mapping there, because they're not going to take the time to say, hey, if you own that individual stock, we're going to map it over to one of these, you know, ETFs or mutual funds or target date funds. So I'll talk more about the self-directed brokerage account when we come back from this next break. But if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Just almost lost my voice. Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We are talking about retirement accounts, transitions, distributions, and options. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in. Let me talk. So right now we're talking about transitions, talking about notice of change, blackout period, mapping. That's the traditional account holders. For anyone who has decided to have a self-directed brokerage account, you might see the term SDBA. I know certain custodians call it a PCRA account. Some are just brokerage link. So these self-directed brokerage accounts, again, those have to be approved by the custodian, and the plan allows the participants to make their own investment options. There's not going to be mapping for that part. So typically what might happen is you would have to see if in that transition, is there going to be another brokerage link account available on the new plan? Typically, I would expect that if they had it in the old, they would have it on the new. I suppose that could be a little bit different if it is a new, like an acquisition or a new employer. But typically, if they've allowed self-brokerage on one platform, they're going to allow it on the new. So what might happen, though, again, as I mentioned earlier, the activity within an account, as long as you're not taking a distribution, has no tax consequence. So you may be required to liquidate those positions in that self-directed brokerage account if it's moving over to a new custodian, because the new custodian may not take those same assets. Oh, I was going to add too in the mapping. There are funds that the old plan may have in the new plan. So you may be mapping like assets, just so you know. But quite often, one of the attractions of these plans is the record keeper or custodian wants you to use their funds because they'll offer, let's say, lower fees. So typically, if you're actually changing the custodian, then those aren't going to map over because, you know, ABC fund company might not hold XYZ, you know, vice versa. So with the self-directed brokerage, you may be directed to liquidate the funds, and they could end up having to go back into the traditional 401k or 403b, and then those would get mapped over typically to the target date fund, the default account, unless before the notice date, before the blackout period, you get those lined up to map over. And then once they map over, you may be able to then move back over to the brokerage link. I don't know all the details sometimes of what different employers are doing or how different custodians handle these transitions. It's, you know, case by case. So the most important thing is to get that information when it's available to you, read it, review it, look at it, ask questions. Usually they have tons of resources for you, whether it's a phone number or a website, or they may even have meetings that they will hold for questions and info sessions, etc. So make sure you participate. It could be really important to you. And the reason I mention that is because if you are someone who may be anticipating retirement in the next 6 months to a year, that blackout period may be more critical to you than it would be to, you know, someone who's, you know, in their 20s or 30s. Because if you do think you will be relying on your retirement account for distributions and you worry being in a blackout period for 30 days, if the market were to drop somewhat, that may be important to you. So you definitely want to look at your options there. But as a further note, mentioning like if you thought you were going to retire in the next 5 years and why that might be important, it could also be important to understand your distribution options, because you may be eligible for an in-service distribution. That might be something you also could do prior to the blackout period. And the notice of change should also tell you that. So the notice of change is going to tell you, you know, here are the dates that you can request a distribution. Here are the dates you can request a loan. Here's the date you have to pay attention to if you're changing your allocations or you want to change your future contribution. It should detail all of those kind of line items that you need to pay attention to. So as I said, tonight we're talking about retirement accounts, transitions, distributions, and options. So I kind of just talked about transitions and paying attention to those notices and the blackout periods and the dates that you have to pay attention to. But let's talk about distributions next. So distributions are distributions by the participant. You're the basically the owner of the account, and you're the one who gets to decide when you're going to take a distribution somewhat. What do I mean by that? Well, if you're still working, you're an employee, and I said, you know, you can take out distributions, it's your account. Well, the employer still may put some restrictions on you. The IRS may put handcuffs on you, reasons to kind of restrict the options you have in making distributions. So typically when you start with a new firm, a new company, when you are eligible to participate in one of the retirement accounts, whether it's a 401k or a 403b, there is something called the summary plan description or the summary plan document, the SPD. Quite often, if you've been employed for a long time, you're going to get like an annual disclosure. Sometimes those are like a little two-page summary disclosure. But at some point, you should have been given the booklet because they're usually quite a bit thicker than two pages. And it is going to tell you all of the features of your particular plan. There are some 401k plans that we call safe harbor plans. The employer is putting money into the plan automatically. That helps them avoid some of the more expensive trustee fees on doing testing, highly compensated employee kind of testing. So the safe harbor plan, you know, would have an automatic 3% contribution in a circumstance, and the employee may not have to put anything in. And or you're going to find out that that summary plan says, hey, if you put in 6%, the employer will put in a matching 6% or a matching 3% or a matching half up to 6% or a matching half up to 4%. Who knows? It could be anything that the company has set up. That summary plan description is very important to tell you what is what they are doing. It also will give you all the information you need to know on taking loans, doing distributions, your beneficiaries, how long you have to work there, your vesting schedule, meaning if it's not a safe harbor plan, when do you actually get the employer contributions? If you, let's pretend you've only worked there 2 years and the employer is putting in something for you on a match and you leave after 2 years. Well, their vesting schedule might have said you're only going to get part of that 2% if you didn't stay 5 years or 6 years, whatever the vesting might be. So that's all good information, but it's also going to talk about some of the other distribution options, which is what I will talk about in the next part of the show, distribution options for people while you're working or when you retire, in-service distributions if you you know, have some other kinds of needs? How do we get out of penalties if we need money before we our retirement age? So if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. We're talking about retirement accounts, transitions, distributions, and options. Meaning what kind of accounts we can have. And right now we're talking about distributions. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. With a special note, a couple special notes. One, if you don't want to talk live on air, just give your question to Cindy. She's over there waiting, 610-758-8810. If you don't want to talk live on air, just give her that and, you know, she'll bring it in to me. And also, you can submit show ideas. I always appreciate show ideas. If you have any, if there's a subject you want me to delve into a little bit deeper, you can leave that there as well at yourfinancialchoices.com. So distributions, as a participant, I want to mention this, particularly when we're going through these transitions, if someone has had a self-directed brokerage account, and for the new plan, they either may not offer it, or the new plan may not offer if you have a financial advisor to help with it. So sometimes the self-directed brokerage accounts, you can have an advisor help, and sometimes, you know, it's just too complicated. If you are a certain age, typically age 59 and a half, and you have to look at your summary plan description as well, typically at age 59 and a half, those plans will offer what we call an in-service distribution. And that in-service distribution can literally be a distribution where you get a check and go spend it, subject to income tax, by the way. But there's no 10% penalty after age 59 and a half. But that in-service distribution can also be a rollover to an IRA, which you can direct yourself and, you know, invest yourself. So you could do a rollover IRA from your self-directed brokerage account if your plan allows an in-service distribution at your age, and you could manage it yourself separately from the 401k, and it would be a rollover IRA. There are little nuances as where I may not, you know, recommend that, but, you know, it could also be a potential option for you, okay? Or you could roll it over to an IRA with the help of a financial advisor as well. And there's Department of Labor disclosures on that. If someone is telling you to, you know, oh, I can help you with that, they do have to disclose conflicts of interest and, you know, the fees and comparison of the fees. All right. And sometimes it's the services that you're comparing too, because quite often these new custodians may or may not be able to help you in the way a financial advisor may be able to, you know, as far as other kinds of advice. All right. So an in-service distribution for qualified accounts, whether it's a 401k or a 403b, that could affect, you know, a transfer to either a self-managed rollover IRA or, you know, asset management kind of rollover IRA. If someone has turned age 55 in the year of termination. So let's pretend as part of this transition, you're actually getting terminated in the new structure, or maybe it's not going to happen right away. And all of a sudden, you know, everything, they move everything over and management changes. And now you get early retired, I'll call it early retired, and you're 55. If you turn 55 in the year of termination, you can also have access to a 401k or a 403b, also subject to income tax on those distributions if it's the pre-tax dollars we're talking about. but there would not be a 10% penalty if you've kept the money in that plan. So that is something you also have to really pay attention to before you do an in-service withdrawal. Let's pretend, I don't know if I've ever seen an in-service withdrawal allowed before age 59 and a half, but let's pretend you weren't going to do an in-service withdrawal, but you found out you were just getting terminated. Maybe you don't want to roll that over, and the employers typically will allow you to keep it where it is, even if you're terminated. If you're age 55, you're terminated, you might want to keep it there in case you do need the money, because you'll avoid the 10% penalty on an early withdrawal. If you end up rolling it over pre-age 59 and a half, post age 55 or old, you know, before 59 and a half, if you roll it over, you don't have that exception to the 10% penalty. So you really got to be in front of these decisions. You have to think about it before you act. You know, sometimes people will say, you know, I don't know. I just relied on so-and-so. Well, this is where you have to be kind of an advocate for yourself. Just like when they tell you you go to the hospital, be an advocate for yourself, or have your family be an advocate for yourself. You need to be an advocate for yourself when it comes to your finances as well, and kind of pay attention. And sometimes you have to ask the question three times, you know, to three different people. One time there was an answer. I knew the answer, but I wanted, you know, I couldn't find the code section that I knew supported my answer. I just knew that I was right. And I called the IRS five times until I got the right person to give me the right answer. We both agreed. I understood. And that was my my proof for, you know, requesting an exception to a penalty. And it all worked out very well. But I knew what the answer was. You listeners may not always know what the answer is. And you think you're relying on people to help you, and it doesn't hurt if you need to get more information. Okay. So just be cautious. If you're terminated at age 55, I'm letting you know you may be able to take a distribution without a 10% penalty in the year you terminate. And something I was never sure about, that I had to look up before the show, because I got my curiosity got going. I thought to myself, if someone's 55, and let's pretend you're working at ABC company, and they you know, merge with XYZ, and they terminate you, and you're 55, and let's pretend your 401k there is $100,000, and you have another 401k from a former employer, you know, 123. I'd always wondered if the exception to the 10% penalty on early withdrawal, if it only applied to that last employer. And it's not true. It applies to any of your 401ks. So if you have 100,000, I said it, you know, employer ABC moves to XYZ. I have 100,000 with XYZ, and I have, you know, $1,000,000 with employer 123 that I was with, you know, for 40 years before that. That age 55 in the year of termination allows me to take a distribution from any of those 401k or 403b plans, again, subject to tax if it's pre-tax contributions, without the 10% penalty. All right? So a little bit of stuff you have to navigate here, but it's worth knowing these rules. Once you're age 59 and a half, there is no 10% early withdrawal penalty. You've met the 59 and a half. In that case, if you're still working, you've done this transition, let's say, or even not subject to a transition, just have money at a 401k, your employer, at 59 and a half, they may allow you to do an in-service distribution. You still, again, pay income tax if it's pre-tax amounts, but you wouldn't have the 10% penalty. I'm not sure if an employer can restrict an employee beyond age 59 and a half. Usually I'm seeing the in-service distributions qualifying at 59 and a half. And again, it could be the amount you want, or you could roll over to, you know, a rollover IRA if you want. So there are exceptions to the 10% penalty from qualified plans. There are other exceptions. I think I will kind of wait to get into those, because I'm not sure I'm going to have time to cover some of the other items that I want to. But I did want to mention the kinds of employer plans we have, the kinds of individual plans that we might have. You heard me mentioning always pre-tax. One could be putting money into a 401k or a 403b two different ways, on an after-tax basis or on a Roth basis. Many, many years ago, we did not have a Roth feature in 401ks or 403bs, but we might have had an after-tax option. When we talk about the amount that you can put into a 401k or a 403b, typically the under 50 amount is capped at $24,500, and that's per individual, not per plan. So if you're working at five different jobs, it doesn't matter. It's $24,500 in total. If your age is 50 to 59, you can do an additional $8,000. That brings us to $52,500. Or if you're 64 or older. Between the ages of 60 and 63, I don't know why they make this so complicated, but between the ages of 60 and 63, the catch-up contribution is $11,250. One thing I want to make sure I note is that if you made over, oh gosh, I think it was like about $150,000 last year with that same employer, then the catch-up contributions in 2026 have to go into a 401 or into a Roth feature. All right. So a lot of the plans had to adopt a Roth if they didn't already have one. And your third party administrator, your HR, they're going to have to keep track of that. Once you cap out the regular pre-tax employee contribution of 24.5, if you do max out, any catch-up contribution has to go into the Roth if you're over that income limit from the prior year. All right. So that's something to be pay attention to. So now thinking about that, going back to pre-Roth features in these plans, some employees would contribute after-tax money. So the IRS always capped the amount that would be tax-favored and pre-taxed. But they've also said you could, you know, if your plan allows, you could put in after-tax money. So it was another way to defer basically the income on that after-tax contribution. And this year in 2026, the maximum amount between the employer and the employee is $72,000. So you say, well, Lori, if I do 24.5 and 8,000, that's $32,500. How do I get to $72,000? Well, if the employer is matching, let's say they throw in another, let's say $6,000. Now we're up to $38,500. Again, wait, Lori, we're nowhere near $72,000. You have to look at your summary plan document to see if your employer allows you to do after-tax contributions, because you still have wiggle room in there. You could put in maybe some after-tax money. Well, personally, you know, because the Roth contribution, even if you're doing the Roth contribution and a pre-tax contribution, that's capped at the 24.5, whether it's Roth or pre-tax, 24.5. For under 50, and then the catch-up, of course. So if you want to do more than that, that's the after-tax amount. And we have clients who do that because they want, you know, a savings vehicle. They're not having to pay interest or tax on their interest or dividends, so they put it in an after-tax bucket in their 401k. Years ago, before Roths, if someone retired and we took money out of their 401k to, you know, roll over to an IRA, they would just take out their after-tax money, put it in an individual account, roll the rest over. Or they might have rolled over their after-tax money and then they had cost basis in their IRA. So when they eventually took money out of their IRA, not all of it was taxable. It's pro rata. Well, now we hate doing that. We don't want to do it pro rata because that's a pain and it's a special form you have to do. So what we're allowed to do now is we can roll the after-tax money into a Roth IRA. So it's very important to also understand all the various buckets you have within your retirement account, whether you have pre-tax dollars, whether you have Roth dollars, or if you have after-tax money. Let's pretend someone has after-tax money, pre-tax money, and Roth money. Well, what I would hope to see then, if someone is going to roll over, the pre-tax money rolls over to a rollover IRA. That's a tax-free transfer. The Roth money goes over to a Roth. And guess what? The after-tax money goes over to a Roth. Because then we can get that after-tax money growing tax-free. When it's in the 401k, the after-tax money is not growing tax-free. It's just not, the earnings aren't going to be taxable until you take a distribution. All right. Lots of complications, but it's all fun. If you have questions, there's still time. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, phone number 610-758-8810. You can also submit questions through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. You could also submit show ideas through yourfinancialchoices.com. And I appreciate those as well. So some of the options I just talked about, understanding what's in your plan, whether it's a 401k or a 403b, whether you have the Roth feature, or the, and it could, again, you could have Roth and 401k or 403b, or if you have after-tax monies, it should all be detailed in your statements. And you may or may not have something called NUA, net unrealized appreciation. Typically, what you're looking for there is if you're working for a for-profit corporation that is matching with corporate stock, then you're going to have corporate stock in your 401k. They have kept track of the cost basis of that every time they put it in. And there's tax advantages to having corporate stock in your 401k upon eventual, you know, distribution. You have the option of taking that employer stock out of the plan pre-rollover. You know, you have to do it all like in, you know, kind of one lump sum. But the stock can be separated from the rest of it. And the stock can go into like an individual account or a joint account. The cost basis that you have to pay tax on the cost basis, that's ordinary income. But that appreciation between the cost basis and the fair market value on distribution is something called net unrealized appreciation. It's automatically long term. You could sell it the next day and pay no tax because it gets, or sorry, pay long term capital gains tax because it's deemed long term. Any growth in that from that day forward on the growth above the fair market value is short term until you've passed a year. But there's a lot of advantages to NUA. And if the cost basis is really low, that's when it is advantageous. If someone told me, oh, the cost basis is $10,000 and it's worth $10,000, I wouldn't even bother. But if someone told me the cost basis was $10,000 and it's worth, you know, $150,000, you know, changing that from ordinary income to long-term capital gains is huge, huge difference. And then the tax you pay on the cost basis, and if you're under age, you know, 59 and a half, it could be subject to that 10% penalty. If you're 55 in the year of termination, you would avoid that 10% penalty too. So just be aware of that. So we talked about amounts that would be 401k and 403b pre-tax, or Roth 401k, Roth 403b, which is tax-free and would continue to grow income tax-free if you roll it over to a Roth. And the after-tax contributions, if you have any, could get rolled over to a Roth as well and grow income tax-free. Other kinds of employer plans outside of the 401k and 403bs, and you'll know why I'm mentioning this, is there could be something called an ESOP, an employer stock ownership plan, that has similar characteristics to what I just talked about with having employer stock in the 401k. There could actually be a separate ESOP. It's very similar kind of theory. Though some ESOP plans are with small employers and they may not allow you to take the employer stock out when you retire and want to roll it over. They're going to cash you out sometimes. So those smaller employers, those smaller ESOP plans may have different restrictions than when we see employer stock within a 401k of like a large corporation. and having the beauty of that NUA. We might not see that in some of the smaller plans. The other kind of employer plan I want to mention when we talk about pension plans, well, Lori, a pension plan is a defined benefit. That's a defined benefit. That's not a defined contribution like a 401k or a 403b. Well, a defined benefit plan is typically a pension. You retire and you make your election, you know, single life, joint life, you know, term certain. There's all different kinds of pension options one may have. But many of the pension plans over the past, I don't know, probably 2 decades have, and I don't quote me on that date, but have adopted what we call a cash balance feature. So a cash balance plan feature is similar to a pension in that the employer is making contributions to this account, and the employer is managing the investments in that, and the employer is taking responsibility for that management and the growth of that plan. They want to make sure there's enough money there to pay out that monthly pension annuity amount to the participant who elects to have that pension. But the difference in the traditional pension plan and the cash balance plan is the employee participant may have the option on the cash balance plan to roll it over to an IRA or take out a lump sum. Whereas the traditional pension plans, the options were simply, how do you want to be paid monthly based on your life expectancy, your marital status, and if you want to provide a survivor benefit? That's the traditional defined benefit plan. The cash balance plan, you still could do that, but you're usually given the option to roll it over or to take it out, take a distribution, all right? So that's why it's important to know what kind of plans you have, because the cash balance plan, if you have a, you know, if, let's pretend you've gone to a new employer and this is an old plan you had from a former employer, you may be able to even roll that over to your new 401k. So you have to kind of understand what your options are with that as well. All right, so those are kind of the employer plans. Now, what other kinds of retirement plans might we have when we talk about retirement accounts and we talk about transitions, distributions, and options? Well, other kinds of options we might have in retirement accounts are the traditional ones we think of, keyword being traditional, traditional IRA that's been around for a very long time, traditional IRA and what I'll call traditional Roth IRA. Those are individual plans. They're not part of the employer plans. The employer plans are under the guidance of the federal government through ERISA, and IRAs are under the guidance of state law. So we have individual retirement accounts and Roth individual retirement accounts. They are usually offer much smaller contributions. So the I think it's in 2026. I'd have to actually look that up. I'm losing track of all of these because they change it every year now. It's really hard to keep I think it's like $7,500 now. Let me just see if I can look this up quickly. What happens with those is the amounts are so much smaller than what you can put into a retirement plan at work. But what happens is you may have better access to these individual accounts. So I think it's still worth checking out. So for 2026, the amount went to $7,500 for traditional and or Roth accounts. But there's income limits on how much you can do. If you're 50 or older, you can do an additional $1,100. So that brings that contribution amount up to $8,600. But again, there's income limits. So real quick, let me give you those. So for single or head of household, if it's under $153,000, you can do the full $7,500 plus $1,100 if you're 50 or older. There's a phase out between 150 and 168. If you're married filing joint, the full contribution's 242, phase out between 242 and 252. And then you're not allowed to make those contributions over that if you are a participant in, you know, other retirement accounts. So you've got to kind of pay attention to that. There's all kinds of nuances to that as well. Like if one if you're married and one participant is, you know, a participant in a retirement account at work, then you can do a spousal contribution. The income limits are higher for that. And if you have no plan at all, then you can do these individual amounts. So we have the traditional IRA, the Roth IRA, simple IRAs I never see anymore. Not to say they don't exist, but they're, I don't see that many. You know, we also could have a self-employed plan. Then there's also what we call the non-deductible IRA. If someone is over the income limit, the IRS does still allow you to make a contribution to a traditional IRA. It's just not deductible. So if it's not deductible, you're doing it on what we call an after-tax basis. And what that means is now you have cost basis in that IRA. The beauty of that is if your income was too high for a Roth, and let's pretend you have no other IRAs, if I put $7,500 into a traditional IRA that's not deductible and I have cost basis, well, the IRS also allows us to convert from IRA to Roth. If I have no other IRAs, I can convert my $7,500 to a Roth, pay no tax because I did it on an after-tax basis. Now I have $7,500 in the Roth that I wasn't allowed to do. It is a loophole. They talked about closing it a number of times. They never closed it. And in fact, they almost kind of addressed it and acted like it existed and they weren't going to do anything about it. So, you know, many people are doing backdoor Roth conversions now. But if you have other IRA money, it's not as clean as that. So if pretend you have $100,000 in an IRA and you decide to do this non-deductible IRA, you put $7,500 into the non-deductible IRA. It's really just a regular IRA account, by the way, even though I'm using the term non-deductible, it just means you don't get to deduct it. You put the $7,500 in there. If I go to convert the $7,500, my cost basis is $7,500 on an IRA that is now $107,500. So when I go to convert, then my conversion is $7,500 over $107,500 times $7,500. That's the cost basis that is not subject to, or that's the part that's not subject to tax, okay? So these backdoor Roth conversions really make the most sense for someone who doesn't have any other IRAs. Now, it doesn't mean you can't still do the after-tax amount. You can. It's just what you would have to do then is always keep track of your cost basis in that IRA, like for the rest of your life and for the rest of your beneficiary's life. All right. So pay attention to that. Something else you want to think about when you're doing distributions from 401ks, 403bs. I told you, you may be able to do an in-service rollover. That's taking the assets directly kind of trustee to trustee. You're not really taking the check and cashing the check and putting it in your bank account. You're going from trustee to trustee. We call that a trustee to trustee transfer, and there's no tax requirement on that. If you actually take a distribution from a 401k, there is a mandatory, I think, 20% tax withholding. Whereas on an IRA, there is not the mandatory tax withholding. So if you are taking distributions from IRAs, remember, if it's a traditional IRA or a rollover IRA, you're going to have potentially have income tax on those distributions, depending on what your other income is and what tax brackets you're in. So you may want to pay attention to what kind of tax withholding you want on what would be a traditional IRA or a rollover IRA distribution. And when you take money from the 401k, there's a mandatory 20% withholding. That may or may not be enough tax. It may be too much tax. It may not be enough tax. You won't know until you get all the other income and prepare your tax return. All right. So just be aware of that. Pay attention. Just because they withhold the tax doesn't mean it's always going to cover it. And it doesn't mean, you know, you're not overpaying at the time too, but you may not be able to do anything about it. On IRAs, we have a lot more flexibility as to what you're withholding. I hope this was somewhat helpful. It can be very complicated, and doing these transitions, particularly when you're going through a blackout period, pay attention to those notices, pay attention to your summary plan descriptions, and, you know, seek out help if needed. Next week, we're going to talk about inheriting retirement accounts, considerations in that. Thank you, Bob and Cindy, for being here. Thank you, Bridger, for being here. Thank you, listeners, as always. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.